that's one thing Journey does. They were a rock and roll orchestra. We were in a rock and roll orchestra, and there are not many of them that can kick and soar and play, you know, complex music. Frontiers was a fairly ambitious record, I think, musically, probably our most ambitious record.
I'm forever yours, faithfully.
There was so much division going on amongst the relationships of people and their wives, you know. Two of the members were not going to make it with their wives. I could see divorce was coming, you know, and it was tough. It was hard.
Hi, everybody. This is Neil Sean.
Hi, this is Steve Perry.
Hi, this is Jonathan Kane in the studio.
In the deepest part of the winter, February 1983, the San Francisco-based juggernaut Journey released the album Frontiers amidst intense anticipation. The entire rock world knew that Journey's preceding album in 1981, called Escape, had spawned three top 10 hits while earning the coveted number one sales position. Journey had already established itself as a tireless touring enterprise. When the Gallup Opinion Poll named Journey as America's favorite band, the fame even spawned the first computer video game named after a rock group. It was obvious that the success increased the demand to extend the already lengthy Escape tour. What we didn't realize is what that extended time away from home was doing to strain several of the marriages of Journey members. Obvious, too, was the skyrocketing fame and fortune from snowballing album and concert ticket sales. Far less apparent was the exceedingly high musical standards to which Journey would be forever held to this day. Here's keyboard player and songwriter John Kane.
You know, there's a price for everything. Every amount of success that you get, for every action, there's a reaction, okay? Let's just say that. And that, you know, it was a great, great tour we had. And, of course, we wrote Separate Ways on that tour. I wrote Faithfully on that tour. So we were able to channel that belief in Journey, that sort of, you know, I mean, you really have to take advantage of when you get validated like that. And the spirit's there from the people saying, we like you, we love your music. Then you must go to the next level and say, well, what about this? You know, lit a fire under us, let's put it that way. It lit a fire. And with Frontiers, there was no stopping us, you know, because we really had the goods.
Yeah.
From Journey's February 1983 album Frontiers, that's Chain Reaction. Jonathan Cain had been noticed by Journey while Cain had opened on a Journey tour as the keyboard player with the Babies. When Journey co-founder Greg Raleigh had enough of the rigorous road schedule, John Cain was drafted to replace Greg.
I guess they were watching me the whole time, and I was doing a lot of things. I'm sort of a utility outfielder in that band, you know. I sort of, I can play center, left, or right, you know. I sing, I play keyboards, I play guitar, I write songs. And I think they wanted somebody that could do all that. And I guess they liked the spirit that I hit the road with. And, you know, I have an energy and a consistency every day, you know, when I work out there. And I think they saw that. And they realized that that was something, you know, I didn't do drugs. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I was married and I was in love and I was faithful to my wife. And I think they were all, you know, happy with the kind of person they saw. Certainly I was. And I was just happy to be there. And I think we sort of had that stuff in common.
Journey selected John Cain ostensibly to play keyboards, second guitar, and backing vocals. I asked Journey lead guitarist Neil Sean if Journey had any inkling of John Cain's songwriting ability.
No, I had no idea. I just had a gut feeling, and I went, like I said, I don't like to think about things. If I have a gut feeling about somebody, I like Jonathan personally. You know, we just got along. We were like brothers as well. Jonathan and I are like born one day apart, and we're very similar in a lot of ways. We thought very similar. We worked together. I mean, there isn't a day that I could ever remember that I got together with Jonathan Cain and we didn't write something that was really cool.
Echoing that sentiment is former Journey lead vocalist Steve Perry.
I don't think we knew what we were getting. We were looking for a keyboard player who luckily could play guitar and sing. We had no idea from a songwriting standpoint that John Cain and I would collaborate and come up with some, you know, such songs like Open Arms and things like that. There was no idea. It just happened to be one of those things that just clicked. Like that, sometimes goodness happens in this world, you know, without your help, usually without your help.
As impressed as the band members were with John Cain's songwriting ability, John told me himself that he didn't know what to expect when he started to work with Journey.
I had no idea, I guess, what the chemistry with Neil and Steve and Ross and Steve Smith would be like. I was very sort of apprehensive when I first arrived in San Francisco as to how exactly it was going to gel. I knew that there was a tremendous responsibility that came with the job of, you know, being a member of the band, as well as being an ambassador almost to music. I mean, when you're a member of Journey, you're a music ambassador. You're internationally responsible for, you know, a lot of things that happened, you know, because it was such a big band. I guess I had no idea what we were going to actually accomplish as a songwriting team. And I had certain opinions about the Journey songs that I had heard for the 3 months. And I studied the band, and that gave me a lot of input.
Just too late, waiting far too long.
That's a John Cain, Steve Perry song from Journey's Frontiers album called After the Fall. It's a musical nod stylistically and lyrically to the great Motown tradition of a loping bass line under a confession of indiscretion. First, John Cain, followed by Steve Perry.
When we started on Frontiers, I think we took the next step into the sort of rock meets Motown approach, and had a lot of fun with it. I think we knew that Separate Ways was actually written at the end of the Escape tour because we needed a real up-tempo rock anthem in the show. We were missing that. You know, we had a lot of mid-tempo songs with Who's Crying Now and Don't Stop Believin', and a lot of ballads. We were doing Still They Ride and Open Arms and Lights, and we needed something that really just, you know, woke the crowd up. And we actually wrote the song for that tour. So it was funny because I wrote the song on a Casio, one of these little Casios that are about a foot long. Then Steven and I wrote the lyrics in a hotel room the next day, and we were doing it at soundcheck the third day. So in 3 days, we had the song we were looking for.
The inspiration for that song came about because there was so much division going on amongst the relationships of people and their wives, you know. Two of the members were not going to make it with their wives. I could see divorce was coming, you know, and it was tough. It was hard. I could see what it was doing to them. And got together with John and said, you know, isn't there some way we can write this song to where, I mean, why do people always have to like explode and, you know, F this, F that, and F you too, you know? And why does it have to be that way? Why can't we look at it like it's not going to work out? We know that, you know, but if somebody you care about is in trouble that was with you all that time, because you know what, you're no picnic either. You know what I'm saying? We never look at ourselves. We're no day at the beach here. But no, we never do that. On both sides, sometimes it's the other way around, you know? And there's got to be a way of writing where it has hope in it. And if he ever hurts you, true love won't desert you, though we touched and went our separate ways.
Apart, hearts broken in two.
Separate Ways from the Frontiers album, peaking at number 8 in the U.S., even higher in the U.K. at number 6. Next in the studio, Journey's Neil Sean and John Cain grant us insight into their songwriting collaborations. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio. Frontiers by Journey.
Hi, this is Jonathan Cain, and welcome back to In the Studio.
Hi, welcome back in the studio. I'm Steve Perry with Redbeard.
Thanks, guys. The songwriting triumvirate of John Cain, Steve Perry, and Neil Sean proved formidable and prolific, but at least one song on Frontiers arrived whole and complete. Here's the composer of Faithfully, John Cain, in the studio.
I woke up with a pen in hand and started just writing these words down. I mean, right out of a sleep, I didn't have time to get up, have a drink of water or nothing. I just started writing. It was very bizarre because I've never done this before, and I just had these lyrics, you know, flowing out of me, and in a half hour later, I had written this whole song. I didn't have a melody or anything for it. It was just words. Highway running to the midnight sun, wheels going round, you're on my mind. Restless hearts sleep alone tonight, sending all my love along the wire. I didn't understand what I was doing. I was just writing line after line on this little napkin, a Journey song that is bigger than all of us, you know. And I'm certainly, to this day, you know, amazed at the way that all came about. It just goes to show you the power of a group, you know, versus one guy. I think to myself, the song probably would have never been even recognized had it stayed in its demo state. You know, I might have gotten a cover somewhere in the country market on it, but the way Steven sang it, you know, he sort of made it timeless. And the way the band played it, it's just one of my favorite things I've ever done as a songwriter, and it's partly due to the amazing performances from everyone in the band Journey.
Highway run into the midnight sun. Wheels go round and round on my mind. Restless hearts sleep alone tonight. Sending all my love along the wire. They say that the road ain't no place to start a family. Right down the line, it's been you and me. And love and a music man ain't always what it's supposed to be. Stand by me. I'm forever yours, faithfully. Thank you.
Nevertheless, some music critics found Journey's popularity a big target, even as the Gallup poll showed Journey to be America's favorite band. Here's the band co-founder, lead guitarist Neil Sean.
At this point, the band was so diversified musically that I think we confused a lot of critics. Critics like people, you know, that wrote stuff about us, that we were a no-name, nondescript musical entity, which I think was total bull, because they couldn't slap an identity on us because we played everything. Sometimes critics get a little perturbed with the fact that they cannot, you know, slap an identity on you and say that you're, you know, a punk rocker, or you're a hard rocker, or you're an R&B artist, or you're a blues artist. We were all of the above.
John Cain attributes much of Journey's success in this period to simply allowing him to organize the prolific bursts of composition from guitarist Neil Sean. Jonathan Cain explains.
I became fascinated with his classical sort of grasp of the music, and I couldn't believe a guy that couldn't write or read music could have these chords in his head, sort of Bach, very complex chord structures. I went to Conservatory of Chicago and studied at music at Roosevelt University. I was so blown away with this guy's grasp of harmony and structure that I thought, this guy is a monster. I had no idea, you know, that he knew what he knew on the guitar. And yet, you know, I had to sit down there and transcribe it all on the piano. Well, I thought we really need to take advantage of this. And with Stephen's voice, of course, being able to soar above all this, and, you know, him being able to do those turns, we should utilize some of this, you know, in Journey. I never heard that. Well, a couple of things I heard on Infinity, Neil's, his real songwriting structure, but I don't think they really utilized a lot of it, because there were always pieces laying around that, well, what do we do with that? You know, what do we do with that? That's one thing Journey does. They were a rock and roll orchestra. We were in a rock and roll orchestra, and there are not many of them that can soar and play, you know, complex music. Frontiers was a fairly ambitious record, I think, musically, probably our most ambitious record, but we didn't capitalize on that sort of classical sound that we could have probably continued to do with the grand piano. And, you know, of course, Neil's ability to play those chords we were talking about and those melodies. I mean, Neil was very symphonic in, you know, that he was an entire string section when he would play, you know, because he would have that ability to visualize. He is very orchestral as a player and as a musician. And, you know, and it was just one of those examples of, you know, the Journey Orchestra and Steve Smith being able to build it up and take it and make it fly, you know, because Ross is very lyrical on the bass. Ross was almost like a cello player, you know.
Send up my love. John Cain, Steve Perry, Lost Love Beauty from Frontiers is called Send Her My Love. Still to come, Cain and Perry return to admit to writing two more hits that never fit onto this multi-million seller. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, you're in the studio for the anniversary of Journey's Frontiers.
Hi, this is Jonathan Cain, and welcome back to In the Studio.
Hi, welcome back in the studio. I'm Steve Perry with Redbeard.
Thanks again, guys. We find that even more hit songs than meets the ear were written for this album. The perks of mass popularity, like that enjoyed by Journey, are apparent. But John Cain remembers feeling a great sense of responsibility as well.
People were listening. We had the audience listening. And it was an incredible forum, you know, for music. It was a respected band. You know, when I played something or when I wrote something, it was going to be heard. It wasn't going to just be, you know, shoveled off in a B-side and, you know, buried. I just felt real fortunate, you know, and responsible. I felt really responsible for what the band stood for and what it was going to say every time we played, you know, the music. And some of it was adjusting to the old material, and I put my trademark on the songs as much as I could, even the old songs. And I played the parts that I thought were important to play, and then I put my own signature, you know, into Greg's songs that he had played on. I just felt like a fortunate son. All those years, I guess, of hanging in there paid off. And certainly, I spent a lot of years, you know, waiting for that kind of opportunity. And when it came, every night I hit the stage, I remember those times that wasn't so fortunate, and I had to pay my dues. And I was playing the keyboards for every kid out there that ever dreamed of being there. And I think that's the great thing about being in a rock and roll band, is that you get to be what they, you know, you want to be what they are too. You know, I mean, it's kind of like a trade. It's an exchange that takes place. It's an exchange that, you know, you can't forget that they love the music. That's why they're there. And so you have to put yourself out in the audience for a second and say, well, what would I want to see this guy, you know, be like, and what would I want to see him play? You know, what kind of fire? And I'd always, you know, pick somebody out in the audience, you know, and just say, hey, you know, you're going to hear Jonathan Cain play tonight, you know? And never like I had anything to prove, certainly, because they were big shoes to fill. Greg Raleigh, you know, being a great legend in his own right. I mean, you know, being with Santana and everything and having all that history behind him, I knew I had to really make a statement when I hit the stage with those guys. And it was great because it really pushed me to being a better musician.
Thank you.
terrific song, Only the Young, written originally for Journey's Frontiers album. Only the Young finally appeared on the soundtrack to the movie Vision Quest and crested at number 9 on the charts in March 1985. Two of its three composers, John Cain, then Steve Perry, tell a moving true story about Only the Young.
David Geffen had heard the song somehow. I think I forget how he actually got his hands on it. But somebody had played him, a copy of, because we mixed it like it was going to actually be on the Frontiers record. He heard it, went crazy, said, I have this movie, Vision Quest, and it has to be on the soundtrack. So he negotiated at the time when Journey, sort of like was teetering, rumors were rampant that we were going to break up and whatnot. We had a record out, and Steven was making a solo album and all this stuff. And actually, when we got back, we thought about putting Only the Young on Raised on Radio because it was so good, We thought, but it didn't somehow fit, on that album. And we thought, well, this Vision Quest thing is a good shot for it. And so we were going to go to New York with Bob Clearmountain to mix it, and we got this phone call from Make-A-Wish Foundation. And a little guy named Kenny Skylick was dying, and his last wish was to meet the guys in Journey. He was 15 years old. He was in Cleveland, and it was a stop on the way to New York. So we got on the plane immediately because time was of the essence and went to see him at his bedside with a Walkman, a 49ers helmet, a platinum and gold Journey album, and the song in the Walkman, Only the Young.
We put the Walkman on his head and played the song for him. He was in a lot of pain at that point, and they were helping him with sedatives, and he'd hear the song, and he'd look up, and we'd be standing there, and he'd look up, and his eyes would get huge, and then he'd kind of drift back, and then he'd look up, and he'd realize that we were really there. The band was, like, in his hospital room, and it was difficult because, it was just a confirmation to him that if we're there, then it must be happening. But also, it was nice that we were there. So it was one of those. And that song was played for him. And, the lyrics to Only the Young are powerful lyrics. I really have to give credit to Jonathan Cain for coming up with the concept to write about before we even knew about Kenny. About Only the Young Can Say They're Free to Fly Away, because there's a certain innocence that the youth has that we all have had at one time, and that is just a wonderful gift. It works against us at times, but it's also a wonderful gift.
John Cain has always seemed to have a keen appreciation for those days in 1983 when Journey's Frontiers album rose to number 2 on the U.S. album sales chart, kept out of the top spot only by the monstrous sales of Michael Jackson's Thriller. Maybe it's because John had a near-death experience, almost drowning as a child. Maybe it's his strong belief in God. Or maybe it was as simple as being the new guy in Journey, with the most objectivity.
And we were relating to the people in a big way. And that's a great thing. Sometimes you lose that. Sometimes you lose your role or your image as the public perceives you. And I think it's real important to, like an actor, realize who you are as you stand on the stage and what you say and how you say it. Would Jonathan Cain play something like this to the audience? The audience suddenly became very, very intimate in our minds, even in the studio, which was great. Because I could see them out there with that long tour that we had done, those 8-9 months in the studio, they were there with us every step of the way. And as we made Frontiers, we tried to keep that in mind, So that's what really came down. We took their energy and that validation and that sort of, you guys are cool. We took that with us, and it was really neat. I couldn't believe it, because when I sat down to the piano, out came Send Her My Love, out came Faithfully, all these songs that made me feel like, where did that come from? Just plug it in, you know, plug it in and continue. Let's see the rest of the movie, you know. This is only the first part. Like Escape was the first part of the movie, and we came along with Frontiers that, you know, and that was a funny album in that, you know, we left two of the best songs off the record, you know, Only the Young and Ask the Lonely.
Another terrific Journey song that amazingly was bumped off of the Frontiers album called Ask the Lonely, which eventually surfaced on the soundtrack to the film Two of a Kind. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, John Kane, Neil Sean, and Steve Ferry. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Red Beard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brune, a big Journey fan. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.